Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mykola Rabchuk, who is a senior research fellow at the Ukrainian Center for Cultural Studies in Kiev and co-founder and member of the editorial board of Kritika, a leading Ukrainian intellectual magazine. He is a visiting fellow at the Institute of Human Sciences in Vienna, Austria. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mykola Rabchuk.
Yeah, hello.
So it looks as if the Yanukovych regime ended not with a bang, but with a whimper. I mean, it's as though his Praetorian Guard, the riot police, just melted, and suddenly the palace gates were open and the protesters were able to wander inside this vast kind of Disneyland of tacky opulence. Is that what happened?
Yes, and this is the typical way of many authoritarian regimes crumbling. You know, they look strong, but as soon as they begin to crash, they may disappear within a few hours. Yeah, it's another paradox.
Well, at this point, though, the political handicappers, you know, the ones that make bets on who's up and who's down, are talking about Yulia Tymoshenko as the new front runner, and that her party is pretty much filling the vacuum. She's not exactly without sin herself, is she? I mean, there have been reports in the past of corruption, and a close aide was caught money laundering, and it's quite possible he was laundering her money. So surely we're not going to go from one kleptocrat to another, are we?
Yes, it's quite possible. And by the way, this is exactly I would rather discourage Madame Tymoshenko from running, even though she probably wouldn't listen to me. I feel that, you know, it's time for Ukraine to reset the entire system, to reload it, and for this goal we need absolutely new people, or at least people who have no corruption tails behind them. And I feel that either Klitschko or Yatsenyuk could be this type of people, but certainly not Tymoshenko. I'm afraid that she may play rather a role of spoiler in this forthcoming elections. So personally, I'm happy that she was released, of course, because she was absolutely imprisoned and illegitimately. But I would like actually to take some treatment in Germany and maybe to come back to business or to do with charity or whatever. But I feel that both she and Yushchenko, they lost their chance to become national leaders, and I don't think that they should repeat this mistake again.
So are there people that have emerged from the opposition who clearly ultimately were victorious, and they were extremely brave? At the end there, they were facing sniper fire from the government snipers. What about the boxer, Klitschko?
Well, I have rather good impression from Boxer, actually. Well, she's not a professional. He's not a professional politician, but he's a man who has very good image. He's pretty popular in Ukraine, and nobody suspects that he's corrupt, that he's running for presidency just to, you know, to benefit financially or something. So, of course, he may be criticized as not very experienced politician, but it's a matter of team of advisors, and I believe that today in Ukraine we have a pretty good generation of young people who are competent, who are specialists in various fields. It's a matter of political will to change the country, and I feel that Klitschko has this political will, and the most important thing, of course, that he's not corrupt, and I feel that he's ready to establish this new system. Ukraine requires fundamental reloading.
It requires fundamental what?
Reloading, reset.
A reset,
yes.
Reboot, as they say.
Yeah, reboot, that's a very good term, yes. Because, you know, all the institutions in Ukraine have been completely destroyed by Yanukovych and his people. They were weak all the time in Ukraine, but Yanukovych basically killed everything, killed court system, police, whatever, you know. So everything should be built from scratch.
But what about building a kind of a sense of morality, if you will? My understanding is that it's one of the most corrupt countries in the world in terms of doing business. It wasn't just that you had this crooked family running the country and looting it with the dentist's son shaking down all of the oligarchs and saying, I'm your new partner. Apparently, throughout the entire country, people have to pay bribes for just about to get anything done. Is there a way to reboot and re-engineer that whole thing? I mean, doesn't that get into the area of personal and social morality?
Well, I recognize that this is a very difficult task, but at the same time, I feel there are good chances for that, because all the people, or at least the majority, absolute majority of the people are tired with this system, and most of them would like to change it. Not only common people who are absolutely exhausted by this immoral system, but also a substantial part of the elite, including the oligarchs. They would feel much more comfortable under the rule of law. Of course, maybe their incomes initially would decline, but ultimately even their wealth would increase, because you know the same real estate, the same factories or whatever in the stable country are much more expensive than in the unstable country. So it's also in their interest. I feel there is some social consensus for reboot. Everything we need, I feel, the political will and good example. Because, no reboot can occur if we don't introduce zero tolerance. And this zero tolerance should be introduced, of course, from the top. You cannot demand decent behavior from some rot police officer if you have huge corruption on the top. So this is why I pay so high attention to the moral stance of the top leaders. It's very important. People would accept it if they see that it's serious. That it's not just words but deeds.
Well, that would mean that Yulia Tymoshenko simply, if she were to fill the power vacuum, that would be a disaster, would it not, in terms of what you just said?
I'm afraid of this development. Actually, I wouldn't like her to win. I would prefer her to not to run at all, and I hope she would be discouraged to do this. But also, so far, I don't see that she's a leader, actually, because all the previous ratings, I haven't seen new opinion surveys, but until recently, she dragged far behind either Klitschko or even some other leaders.
Right.
So,
well, let me again remind the audience that I'm speaking with Mykola Rabchik, who is a senior research fellow at the Ukrainian Center for Cultural Studies in Kiev and co-founder and member of the editorial board of Kritika, a leading Ukrainian intellectual magazine. He is a visiting fellow at the Institute of Human Sciences in Vienna, Austria. So, given that the country is bankrupt, in the $15 billion from Russia is not likely to be forthcoming, and in many ways it seems as if Putin brought this confrontation on himself by forcing the Ukrainians to choose between the EU and Russia, and it would seem that is a false choice. I mean, isn't it possible for Ukraine to have relations with both EU and Russia without it being mutually exclusive?
It's a very nice idea, and of course I would like it to be implemented, but it's hardly possible with today's Russia, with Putin's Russia. Let's be realistic. You know very well that Russia plays zero-sum game. It's everybody knows Russia is playing zero-sum game, and you cannot play with a partner, with whoever who is playing this game. You should play the same game. It's impossible. It's just theory of games. You cannot win if you don't recognize this reality. So maybe sometime in the future, when Russia would democratize, when Russia would become normal country, maybe we would be able to build normal relations. But now they would like either everything or nothing. Of course, they would like everything, not nothing. But there is no other option. That's the problem.
So what do you think Putin's next move will be then?
Well, nobody knows, actually. I hope, you know, from my point of view, as long as I observe Russian behavior, this regime is pretty opportunistic. So they have some feeling of red line, which can be overstepped or not. They are not, you know, crazy adventurers who are ready to do whatsoever. They feel what is possible and not. Probably maximum they can do now in the current situation is just to play the usual role of spoiler. They can orchestrate some provocations to encourage some, you know, elements in Ukraine. They may, especially, you know, they may stage some provocations in Crimea because they have really, this is probably the only region where they have serious influence. But still, you know, it largely depends also on Ukraine society, Ukraine authorities, on international reaction. So I wouldn't exaggerate Russian, you know, strength and so on. Yes, they can play the role of spoiler, but not to lead, you know, any processes.
Well, though, after World War II, there was a guerrilla movement in the west of Ukraine fighting the Red Army for a number of years, the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, and there were tremendous casualties on both sides. Presumably, Russia has memories of that. Is there that possibility that if Russia tries to militarize the situation, that there'd be you could have a kind of guerrilla war?
Well, I don't think that Russia would try to do it, there is no need so far for guerrilla war because Ukraine has its own army, and I believe that at least some part of this army would be able to fight. So Kremlin is pretty aware of this. So you know, it's not country like Georgia. It's much bigger and much stronger, and international reaction probably would be also much stronger than in the case of Georgia, which is remote and virtually unknown country. Actually, it was a very bad lesson, I feel. At that time, international community did not behave the best way, especially European Union. But still, I hope they draw some lessons from 2008. So, you know, I don't believe in this apocalyptic scenario, even though, of course, nothing can be excluded in case of Kremlin. But it's very unlikely, very, very unlikely.
But the Kremlin does, Putin's idea and why he forced Yanukovych to ditch the EU deal and join his economic union is that Russia, that's a huge market for Russian goods, the Ukraine, and it makes Putin's Eurasian market look pretty pathetic, doesn't it, if he's only got Belarus and Kazakhstan.
Well, first of all, we have to think about a global market, because as long as Ukrainians would produce something for this peculiar Eurasian, Russian, Kazakhstan, Belarusian market, you know, they would never modernize the economy. There are no incentives to modernize economy. So I feel this is, you know, way to nowhere. Of course, Ukrainians would face some difficult period at the beginning until they reconstruct the economy. But, you know, I hope that they would get some support from the EU. They have to show, first of all, the political will that they would like to change the country. Ukrainians finally accomplished something they had to do back in 1991. In general, I consider this process in Ukraine, this revolution, as a third attempt to finish the unfinished business of 1989, of this, you know, anti-communist revolutions in Eastern Europe. Ukrainians failed in 1991, Ukrainians failed during the Orange Revolution, and now they have the third chance and to normalize the country, yes. So they should do this, and of course, it would take a lot of time and efforts, but Ukraine is a pretty rich country. It's not, you know, it's not like Greece or Bosnia or whatever. It's really a country which could produce whatsoever, and it simply requires some good management, because for years it was mismanaged. And in this regard, of course, European Union can do a lot, can provide some guardianship, some assistance, some technical support. Actually, you know, Ukrainians do not need the fish which is offered by Russia. Ukrainians need fish roads. And European Union probably is in position to provide these fish roads.
I see. In other words, give a man a fish, he eats for one day. If you teach a man to fish and give him a fishing rod, he can eat forever, right? That's the
expression. Yes, this is what Euromaidan was about. You know, people at Euromaidan, they did not expect that, you know, European Union would immediately bring you money or whatever. They wanted from the government to behave like in European Union, to introduce system of justice, rules like in the European Union. This is what main demand, justice, rule of law, freedom, civil rights, and on and on.
I see. So in terms of Putin's paranoia about NATO and European and American expansion into the East, and of course the Russian security people obviously recorded that conversation with the U.S. State Department official and the U.S. ambassador in Kiev, which they, you know, leaked. So tell me, what do you think can be done to assuage Putin's paranoia, or is it just there's nothing can be done? He's the way he is, and until you have, Russia is effectively run by a criminal, and a criminal class. Your feeling is that until they go away, I mean, when are the criminals going to go away? That's not what they normally do, is it?
Well, frankly speaking, I don't believe that anything can be done with this regime. I observed Russian propaganda during all these events, during Euromaidan. It's absolutely, you know, absolutely crazy. It's Goebbels-style propaganda. They invent such fantastic stories. They distort reality so much. And I'm really afraid that they begin to believe in their own propaganda. This is the most dangerous thing, of course. I feel that the best way to help Russia today is just to help Ukraine. It's my feeling is. Because if Ukrainians manage to transform their country, and they have a very good chance now, it will be excellent example for Russians. You know, they probably would be encouraged by this way. And this is what Putin is afraid of, actually. And, you know, of course, this regime is so far it looks like well entrenched and very strong. But, you know, Yanukovych also looked very strong, and Ceausescu looks very strong. But suddenly, you know, such regimes may crumble very, very rapidly at any moment. Very often they appear to be like, you know, paper tigers. So, yeah, it's a matter of time.
Well, Mykola Rabchuk, I thank you very much for joining us, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Mykola Rabchuk, who is a senior research fellow at the Ukrainian Center for Cultural Studies in Kiev and co-founder and member of the editorial board of Kritika, a leading Ukrainian intellectual magazine. He is a visiting fellow at the Institute of Human Sciences in Vienna, Austria. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer David Rochert. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.